Hi there. You're listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse, and I'm your hostess, Heather Wayman. All right. Hi, everybody. It's Heather Wayman, and I am the director at Belly Dance Geek, and I want to welcome you to episode 70 of the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. This episode is sponsored by the Belly Dance Bundle. The new bundle is a collection of amazing dance products contributed by 22 dancers from around the world, and Nadira's Rock the Routine course is also included. The bundle is geared towards helping you figure out what to practice. It's all online and at your own pace, but with community and accountability built in. It goes on sale for 1 week only, beginning October 16th, and you can check out all of the contributors at bellydancegeek.com/bundle. And if you've got a product or a service or an event that you'd like to promote, we'd love to have you be a Clubhouse sponsor because it helps us with the cost of producing the show, and it helps you reach over 1,500 enthusiastic and engaged Belly Dance Geeks. And you can find information on that at bellydancegeek.com/sponsor. And the Clubhouse, a lot of people are familiar with it, but some may not be. It's a place where dancers can get together and geek out on all of those things that are hard to get in classes and on DVDs. If you want help with the what, things like moves, combos, and choreography, there are a lot of resources out there for you. But if you need help with the why and the how, things like music, culture, business, and composition, that can be a lot harder to find. So every month we interview a different guest expert on a different geeky topic, and there's always time for question and answer so you can geek out too. So if you think that knowledge and creativity go together like chocolate and peanut butter, or maybe red wine and chocolate, my favorite, you're in the right spot. My guest today is Tiffany Hunter, creator of the Belly Dance Bundle, which I said also goes on sale October 16th for only 1 week, so you have to get it while you can. Throughout the year, the Belly Dance Bundle aims to help dancers practice more consistently and more efficiently, and you can check that out at bellydancegeek.com/bundle. So welcome, Tiffany. Thanks for joining us today.
Hi, I'm super excited to be here.
Great to have you with us. I always like to start off, some people may have heard the story before because you are geeking out with us again, but there's a lot of people that probably haven't. So I'd love for you to tell us how you got started. What's your origin story with belly dance?
Oh, well, my first kind of exposure to it, and I think after I mentioned this last year on the Clubhouse, I found out that it's way more common than I thought, which is actually really cool, I think. But there was a Brazilian soap opera called Ucloni, and the main female lead in it was like half Moroccan, half Brazilian, and so she belly danced in the show. Now I know that what she was doing was wildly not what people do or what they wore or anything. It was basically like Orientalist fantasy, but in a soap opera. So I saw that as like a 10, I think it was 10, 11, and I was like, I'm going to do that. But I couldn't find any classes near me that would teach anybody that young. You had to be 16, I think, at least for any of the classes in my area at the time. So seven, 8 years later, I stumbled across a community ed flyer for my local high school, and there were belly dance classes on it. I was like, oh, yes, let's do this. So I started there, and as I've been saying with some of the guests on my podcast lately, it spiraled out of control at that point. I took a lot of classes. I started dancing when I went to college. I found the local, like the bigger local troupe, and started dancing with them. And then I started dancing in restaurants way too early, really looking back on it now, but there was no one else in the city that really danced. So it was kind of me or nobody. At the time, me and my teacher. So I did that. And then I moved to LA for a couple of years, and I studied so much. At some point I got fired while I was in LA, and I was on unemployment. And so I was just taking every weekend in LA, there's something going on. And so I was just taking workshops like a madhouse, just everywhere all the time. And then we moved back to Florida. And then I kind of really went pro, quote unquote, and started doing gigs and dancing in restaurants and stuff. And then I took it online because we were traveling a lot, and now I'm here somehow 10, 11 years later. It's my hobby. It's my career. It's my joy. Really, I just really love it.
That is fantastic. You mentioned something about starting too early, and I think.
Oh yeah.
I think probably I would hazard a guess. Many or most of us probably would say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
And your story about the first experience that you saw of what you thought was belly dance. So, you know, same thing for me too. I think that's a very common thread that we all have. But what's important is that we continue to learn and we continue to grow and we find out, oh, hey, there's a whole nother world out there. And what I thought this yeah. was really isn't. So I think the danger is when we don't continue to grow and we just...
Right. I like keep that view your whole life is thinking that that's what it actually is when it's not even close to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've learned a lot in 10 years.
Yeah. And when you start teaching that thought process too.
Exactly.
That's a problem. So anyway, we probably, the royal we, the global we.
Oh yes. I use we all the time.
I know that when I started teaching, I had the basic moves down and probably just started with some things that I probably wouldn't do now if I had it to mm-hmm. do over again. But we learn, you know, we learn. And
I think for me, thankfully, teaching was something that did come later for me. I did a lot more performing and like performing before I was ready. And teaching for me came, I think I had been dancing for like 7 or 8 years before I started really teaching.
Oh, wow.
And by then I had really like turned my views around from like baby belly dancer to like, oh, I don't know anything. And I think when you realize you don't know anything, that's a good time to be like, oh, maybe I should teach this. Because it's you know enough to know you don't know anything.
Yeah.
And like, that's, I think, a really important step as a teacher. But I, you know, it varies from person to person.
I agree, because when you do start to teach, you do start to learn more because you don't want to mm-hmm. tell people the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And it forces you to come out of your own little world and learn new things so that you mm-hmm. can impart those as well. Yeah. Yeah. So, we're going to talk about what to practice. I think that's probably one of the hardest things for a lot of people.
Yep.
What do you think is one of the biggest challenges facing dancers with regard to practice?
Oh man, there's so many things.
If you could pick your top three.
I can do top three because okay. they're the ones I talk about a lot. So in doing the bundle for the past couple of years, I've talked to a lot of dancers. And what keeps coming up time and time again is that people, and I'm going to say think because I don't agree with them, people think that they don't have enough time to practice. They don't have the motivation to practice and they don't know what to practice. And those kind of keep coming up as the top three things. And there's like a smattering of other ones that come in like right below it that I've heard several times. But I think those three are the ones I hear the most. And I got to tell you that I think two of the three of them are total crap. Sorry, guys. I love you. I love you all. But we're going to real talk here for a second.
Right. That's what we do. Okay. So for somebody that tells you that they don't have the time to practice, what would you say to them?
Before that performance that you have next weekend, all of a sudden, do you still not have time to practice? Because if you suddenly find the time to rehearse that choreography to death in the weeks before the recital or before that gig or whatever it is, like then you have time, the rest of the time to practice. Now, do I think you have to use that time to practice? No, you don't. It's totally your choice. You get to choose what you do with your time. But I think we need to be honest about it. If we're choosing not to practice, that's totally cool. I'm like so okay with that it's ridiculous. You don't want to practice? That's not your priority right now? Awesome. Go do whatever is your priority and stop guilting yourself over not practicing, right? Be honest, let it go. Now, if you do want to practice and that is a priority and that is a thing, then you can find the time somewhere in there. Now, I will give, there are some people who are exceptions to this. They really cannot find the time, but most people can find the time somewhere. in that space of their day.
Yeah, I think it's all about priorities and also setting realistic expectations of yourself.
Yes.
You know, because I think a lot of people, when they think they, oh, I need to practice, I've got to practice. Well, first, that need.
Right.
That's the guilt.
Stop shooting all over yourself.
Exactly. She said,
just stop.
Shooting.
That. I said, should.
Right.
We do not need to put an explicit warning on this one. I'm trying real hard not to curse, by the way. Heather, just so you know.
I think we're probably okay with, you know. setting realistic expectations, you know, most people probably are not going to find an hour every single day. Right? I mean, you might if you schedule it in, but what about, you know, 5 minutes or 10 minutes or incremental practicing?
Right.
You know, it all adds up.
It all adds up. And I think if you're going to do that, and we'll get into this too, but it's so much easier to take those 15 minutes, that 20 minutes, if you have a plan, if you know what you're going to practice. Because if you don't know what you're going to practice, even the hour that you've scheduled and somehow carved out of your day becomes useless because you're not utilizing it. You're not using it efficiently. So you get stuck in this loop of messing with your iTunes library or looking up videos on YouTube and Heather's hiding her face, right? Like, we've all done it. We've all been there. But it's not the most effective way to reach your goals. And I think it's what sets a lot of us up for like, oh, I've been practicing a lot, but I haven't. Like, this technique hasn't improved, or my shimmy's not more consistent. And it's like, well, have you really been practicing? Or have you been like kind of practicing because you didn't have a plan?
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned motivation. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? If somebody says, not motivated to practice.
I have a soapbox.
Get on
so,
it.
Okay.
Get on up there.
Motivation is my soapbox. Motivation, I think, is not the thing that pushes you to practice. Motivation is the thing that comes after you start practicing. I think people have it a little bit backwards. So I mostly think motivation is crap. You are very rarely going to be motivated to get up and dance because that new show is out on Netflix, or your kid is really cute, or your dog really wants to go on a walk, your office is a mess, you really need to do the laundry. There's always going to be things that are like more enticing than doing the hard work. Because that's how we work as humans. Our brains are just constantly finding excuses to not do things that we know we should be doing because it's hard. Your brain's like, no, I want to take it easy, man. Like, I worked all day making your body just function. Why are you going to make me do more stuff?
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of have to push past that, like, needed to be motivated and just kind of drag yourself to the dance floor, I feel sometimes. Because I know sometimes for me, it literally is like picking myself up by the seat of my pants and pulling myself to the dance floor. And then 5 minutes in, right, usually you're like, oh, yeah, this is fun. And then you get motivated and then you get going. Now, that doesn't mean you need to beat yourself up into it. I give myself 15 minutes. So if I'm doing like an hour long practice, like that's actually what I'm going for. And I get 15 minutes in and I'm still just like, dude, I do not want to do this right now. Then I give myself permission to stop because I tried. I got there. I worked on something for 15 minutes, usually the more important thing of my practice. And then I'm like, cool. I'm going to go watch TV. I got this far. So it's not like an all or nothing situation, right? Yeah. You got to give yourself some grace in there. Yeah.
Because if you start beating yourself up over it, then it's going to make it even harder to get in there and do it.
Yeah. And like, we have so much negative self-talk already, right? Our brains just run on this negative self-talk loop. So do we really need to add more negative self-talk to the loop by beating ourselves up? Because I really don't think we do. But at the same time, you have to not listen to the negative self-talk loop to get yourself to the dance floor in the first place. So it's like this, you got to really experiment with your brain.
Yeah, true that. Well, so there's a thing, and I hope I don't jump all over the place here. I've got some notes and I've kind of got a little flow, but if I miss something and you want to go back, stop me.
Will do.
So there's this thing that you that I learned about from you called the limiting factor.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about that?
What is that? So the definition, I actually pulled it up out of the guide so I could read you the definition. So the definition of a limiting factor is the factor that limits the reaction rate in any physiological process governed by many variables. So that's fancy speak.
I know. Now,
what it means in English, what it means is, say you are trying to, I'm going to use the word Maya for a figure eight on the plane that I cannot name.
Yeah, that's
words.
It's a vertical figure.
A vertical figure eight. That's vertical is the word I could not use, right? I can do limiting factor, but I can't think of the word vertical. So imagine you're trying to do a Maya, a vertical figure eight, and do it on a level change. So you're going down with it and then coming up, right? There are several things that could, but you can't do it. You're having trouble with this move. For some reason, your brain isn't handling it. Your body is like, blah, blah, it's not working. I'm really good at sound effects. So there are so many things that could be inhibiting the movement from what it looks like now to what you want it to look like, what you're imagining it to look like. Is it a flexibility issue? Are your hips not going far enough out to the side, right? Is your flexibility inhibiting the motion from being as big as you want it to be? Is it the technique of the move itself? Maybe you need to just scale it back and work on Mayas on their own. Or is it the fact that maybe your legs aren't strong enough to handle the down portion to really get into the squat that is kind of necessary to take it down a level, right? There's all these things that could be the problem. Whichever one of them is the problem is your limiting factor. So if it's a strength issue, you can keep doing that move as much as you want to do that move, and eventually it will get better because you'll get stronger. Or you could just maybe add some squats to your exercise routine and strengthen your legs so that the next time you try the move, your legs are strong enough to handle it and you can do it just fine. If it's a flexibility issue, then you need to work on that. If it's a technique issue, the actual move itself, then you need to scale back and work on the basics. So figuring out kind of what you're working on, what the problem is in what you're working on, and then honing in, focusing on that limiting factor to really like eradicate it from the equation will make your life so much easier, because you're not just like barreling through a wall, just running yourself into the wall over and over and over again, trying to get past whatever hurdle is in front of you, right? You can actually
have you seen my practices?
You can actually like take a step back and work at it a little more efficiently and be like, okay, my legs are tired, or, oh, in my head, it looks like this, but here it looks like that. So it must be that I'm not moving my hips that far enough to the side. Can I even move my hips that far to the side? Should I be moving my hips that far to the side? Right? Really taking a step back and thinking about what you're doing, instead of just going and going and going and going and going and going and going. And like, that just drives us kind of crazy. So I like to step back and help my students find what the problem is. Where is the problem coming into the movement? And then just really focusing on that little piece of it as much as possible to try and get past the hurdle. Because usually that it's almost like a, it's not like a quick fix, like a snap of your fingers kind of thing. But once you work at it a little bit, then it's like, oh, I got it. And you can move on to the next variation of it or put it into the choreography or whatever is next for you.
Right. And without figuring out what that limiting factor is, I know for myself and probably for a lot of people, you repeat. Over and over and over again, and you're waiting for it to get better. But if you don't figure out what that limiting factor is, you're just reinforcing the thing that you don't want there, but you don't know what it is.
Right. So if it's bad posture, right, if your limiting factor is your posture, you're just reinforcing your posture over and over and over again, which isn't going to help you when you figure out that that's what the problem is and you go to fix it, because then it's stuck in your body.
Yeah, that's what repetition will do for you. Repetition can be a good thing and it can be a bad thing.
Yeah. So I really encourage, this is where I think trying to find your limiting factor, it can be easy to do on your own, but I actually think that having a private lesson with a teacher, or if you can catch somebody after class, or if maybe a class isn't very full and there's only like two or three students, you can ask about something like this. Really getting a teacher to kind of see it from a removed perspective with a little more expertise, and then they can be like, oh, here's the posture is the problem. Your rib cage isn't in the right place. Your feet are in the wrong, you know, your feet are too far apart or they're too close together. And they can kind of help guide you through what that limiting factor is in the move so that you can practice on your own more effectively.
Yeah. Those are all great tips. And in the absence of either of those two things, if those are not readily available to you, video recording.
Yes.
What you're doing is amazing.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
You're outside of your body and you can look at it from an objective, more of an objective, out of body experience, so to speak.
Yep. But only if you're turning off the negative self-talk reel.
Yeah, that is tough. But the more that you video and the more that you watch yourself, the easier it becomes. And mm-hmm. then, you know, I videotape everything I do as I'm working on things because I know I don't see it in the mirror. And that's also a really great way to come up with, new combinations, new moves, stuff like that, the things that you don't see, you know.
Mm-hmm.
What was that? What did I do? You wouldn't even know. So, yeah, I encourage everybody to practice videoing themselves and just looking at it, even if it's just a 3 or 4 minute thing.
So, actually, on this vein, last year for the 21 Days of Belly Dance Challenge that we did on Instagram, that's one of the takeaways that a lot of the participants had at the end. I was asking like what everybody thought, if they had fun, everything. And they were like, you know, I never realized how useful videoing myself would be because yeah. they'd done it for 21 days. And they were like, I just noticed all these things about my dance that are great or need work, or, you know, they really became more in tune with what their dance actually looked like at that moment in time. And I think quite a few of them kept doing it after the challenge was over, and we are doing it again this year, guys. So like if you want some help getting into the habit of videoing yourself and looking at it and dealing that, this is a great place to do that. And Heather will have links for you for all of that as we move forward.
Oh yes. We are going to talk about that. All right. I think you, I was going to ask you if you had any tips to help identify your limiting factors. And I think we kind of got.
Yeah, I think I did.
you got, you answered my follow-up.
A psychic.
Yeah. And overcoming them too. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Strength training, cross training.
Cross training is the big one. It'll solve so many of your limiting factors. It really will. Cause I think so many of the limiting factors we run into as dancers are stamina related, they're strength related. They're not usually flexibility related because we do a lot, like as a whole, belly dancers tend to do enough flexibility training in their practices. But what we don't do a lot of, we don't really add in the strength element a lot of times. Most teachers don't do that in their classes. We don't add in that cardio element to it unless there is, usually there's like a separate class at the studio that's more cardio focused. So really doing those two things will solve the limiting factors for a lot of problems that you might be experiencing in your dance, but that's not always the case, right? Sometimes it is a technique. It is a posture. It is a foot placement issue. Like it's the little things that can be overcome.
I have on my list here, 5 ways to constructively identify your strengths and challenges.
Well, one, you can download this awesome guide that Heather's going to tell you about. Look, she's even printed it out.
I got it printed out. You guys, this is the most awesome thing ever. I'm going to put a link on the episode page, and it's really easy to get to. It's a 15-page PDF that you can download. You can print it out. You can read it on your iPad, all that kind of stuff. It's called Figuring Out What to Practice, and you can get it at bellydancegeek.com/whattopractice. And I will put a link on the episode page for that too, and I'll mention it again at the end. But how is this PDF going to help them help everybody figure out how to identify their strengths?
So when I first started the bundle, I was trying to think of what I could provide to people that was really useful, just, you know, put it out there in the world. And the thing I struggled with the most was figuring out what to practice. So I kind of went through this process with myself. I self-experimented. I like to self-experiment a lot. And I came up with these worksheets that kind of help you figure out what areas of your dance need some work. So the way that I have you guys go through the worksheets is that you read over the categories, which are kind of at the bottom of the PDF, just to keep things kind of clean. So you just read through those if you are unsure about anything. And you can go up to the actual fillable worksheets, right, which is why printing it is really great. And then just kind of have a jam session, put on some music, dance around, just start feeling good about things. And then maybe fill out your strength sheet, right? You just got through your like 5 minute dance, 10 minute dance session. So you have a really good idea. Were you doing the same move the whole time? Did you choose to use Zills? Right? Like start kind of answering those questions and then going through some of your old performances. Grab some videos from Hoflas, from recitals, from group choreographies, really whatever you've got. And just start watching them, right, without the negative self-talk. Turn that off. We are critiquing ourselves, but we're not hating on ourselves. We're not bashing ourselves. And kind of compare all of that. Fill out those sheets while watching those videos so you can see. Start putting numbers on things. I like to put numbers on things. I'm a numbers person. And by doing that, you can kind of start to see both where your confidence in your practice lies, because you're going to put higher numbers on the things you're more confident in. But you're also going to start seeing the things that are on the lower end of the scale. And then you can decide whether or not those things are important enough to you to start practicing and focusing your practice on, to kind of bring them up with the rest of your strengths. So I find that as a good way to kind of separate your strengths, separate your challenge areas is what I like to call them, because they're not weaknesses, right? We use strength and weakness, but weakness isn't, I don't think, the right word here. It's more of like a challenge to get better.
So it's more of a positive. Less negative, yeah.
Right, because we're turning off the negative self-talk. And if you don't have any videos of performances, if you haven't performed in Hoflas or anything like that, put on a video, record yourself, right? What we were just talking about is put on a song, record yourself doing some things. Put on a song and record yourself doing Zills if that's something that you've been working on. And start kind of using the worksheets with that jam session and see what comes of it. Because it'll be a little enlightening, I think, to have it laid out so clearly in front of you what you are confident in and what you're not.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm a big fan of worksheets because I think if you just sit and you look at a video of yourself and you might take notes, but the notes can be just all kind of like scribbly and all over the place. But if you have, like, these worksheets are fantastic. They're categorized with all sorts of different things. There's moves and layering and movement variety, differences in speed. It covers arms, grace, and transitions, which I think is very important. Expression and gaze, feeling, musicality, usage of stage. And it's really laid out very, very nicely here. So you can, like Tiffany was saying, you have a concrete starting point, mm-hmm. you know, and you could start to see patterns emerge.
Because when we practice, a lot of times we do two things. We either beat ourselves up on the thing we're not good at, like, holy crap, I'm going to get this three-quarter shimmy and I'm going to move it. I'm going to walk forward with this three-quarter shimmy. I'm going to do it. And that's all you practice ever, all the time. That's one way people go, right? And then you just kind of beat yourself up and then you get really tired of that move, of the technique. And then whatever motivation you did have is totally gone. Like, you really don't want to practice because it's boring. You're just doing the one thing. Or what people do is they only practice what they're really good at. So for me, my torso work is my strength. And if you just let me go, that is what I will do for 15 minutes, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever. It is fun. It's easy for me. And I love it. So of course, that's what I'm going to do when you give me music to dance to. But that's not what I need to work on, right? I need to work on my arms and I need to work on my Zills. So I have to make a conscious effort to, like, step away from the things I'm good at and actually work on the things that I want to improve, right? While at the same time, not, like, beating myself into submission. Must play Zills all the time. Must get better at Zills, right? Like, you got to find the happy medium. So what I like to do is structure my practice so that I do maybe 5 minutes of torso work as a warm-up, right? That's my part of my like getting into it, because that's what I really love to do. And then transitioning into the thing that maybe I need more work on.
Yeah, that's great. I do the same thing. I like to do hip work mm-hmm. stuff more so than the upper body, and it's not, yep. you know, it's not always as strong. Another thing I think that's important too is we always, as I'm thinking about OMIs right now, because I always pick the clockwise direction of an OMI.
Oh, right.
Rarely, yes. not enough. I shouldn't say rarely, but not enough. I don't go the other direction. And you have to do that because in turns too, turn into the right.
Yep.
Yeah.
How many times have you gotten into a group choreography and the teacher or the dancer who choreographed the piece turns the wrong direction, wrong, quote unquote, from you?
Yeah.
In the whole dance, the whole weeks of practice, you're always turning the wrong way. That yeah. has happened to me so many times.
And it happens for two reasons too, I think. One, trying to learn somebody else's choreography is always a difficult thing because you're getting inside that person's brain. And mm-hmm. you didn't make it. And everybody has a strength as far as the direction of turn. And for me, it always seems to be the exact opposite of everybody else. I don't know why. And when I make stuff, I generally tend to, you know, do a lot of right turn stuff. I mean, it balances it out. Mm-hmm. But maybe not everybody does that. If I guess where I'm going with this is if you are focusing on things that are your strong suit, and that's right hand turns or clockwise turns. Yep. You're not putting any left hand, you know, left turns in there. Yeah, it could cause a problem.
Yeah, my first teacher was left-handed, and so she did everything on the left. Her left side was her strong side. So as a baby dancer, I actually got way better at doing things on my left. I can spin a cane better with my left hand than I can with my right, even though I'm right-handed. Right, and just everything. Because she was left-handed, and it's been 10 years, 11 years now, and that's still the case. Like, it invades your DNA, guys.
Yeah.
Your teachers just get in there, and they never leave. It's wonderful.
I am left-handed, but I do a lot of stuff to the right. I credit that with ballet class, because everything started on the right. Everything started on the right. Anyway. Yeah. Anyway, you mentioned YouTube videos, and I have a tip about watching yourself on YouTube videos and watching other people too. I learned this from a dancer in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Her name is Rivka Sultana, and we were going through some golden era stuff at the time, watching videos of dancers from the golden era. And one of the things that she taught us to do is to watch these YouTube videos without the sound for the first time. We'd watch them several times, but the first time we'd watch without the sound. And that, it really made a difference in helping us to focus on the actual movement and not get so caught up in the music. And I think that doing that on our own videos is probably a really good idea too. So we can isolate.
Yeah, I really like that.
Yeah, and it really makes a difference. It doesn't sound like it would be that big of a deal, but it's very helpful. And then the next time you watch it with the sound.
Yeah.
You can pick out different things. Then you start to focus more on the music, and you know, you just kind of put things together in a different way.
Yeah, I really like that. And since we're talking about like YouTube videos, what is also a really good exercise, and I actually don't have this, I don't think I put this in the guide. If you have a dancer that you really admire, you really like, you watch all of their videos, you're kind of just a little obsessed with them, because we all have our like dance obsessions, right? Watch one of their videos and fill out the sheet for their video. Ooh. Because seeing kind of quantified what it is that you really like about that dancer's performance can really help inform you on what you want your dance to be more like. You know, are they like, by filling out the sheet, you might figure out, oh, it's because she's so graceful. Her transitions are so good. Or it's her musicality that's really on point. Or, you know, her speed varies so much. She did all this fast, and then she did the slow, and she did the internal, and then she emoted. You know, you can kind of start to pinpoint what it is about that dancer that really kind of like works for you, what it is that you kind of imagine yourself going towards, because then you can compare that sheet, not in a judgmental way, with your own sheet and be like, okay, my transitions, like to get up to this level, my transitions need work, my speed needs work, and my musicality needs work. You're like, and now you have a starting point.
That is a fantastic tip, because I think a lot of us, and I count myself in this too, when I first started, I watched a lot of YouTube videos. And I watched and watched. She dances so wonderfully. I want to dance like her.
And you what does that mean?
I know, exactly. What does that mean? Exactly. So then you start trying to emulate and copy and, you know, just great tip. That is fantastic for a quantifiable thing.
Yeah, because I think what we tend to do when we watch these videos, right, is I want to dance like her. So you start looking at her combos, right, and like the actual moves she's doing. And that's not where the soul of a dance or a dancer really lies. It's not necessarily where their unique style comes in. Maybe it's the way they play with the music or the way they vary the movement levels, right? They go high, they go low. Maybe it's something in there that's really capturing you. So really kind of pinpointing what it is instead of just taking combos out of the dance can really like push you to the next level, I think.
Yeah, that is so true. Okay, moving along here. So you've got an acronym that I really enjoy this. I like this. It's SMART, SMART. Tell us what that is and how we can use it to set goals for our growth.
This is great because it leads right in off what I was just talking about. So SMART goals are actually, they're pretty common if you are part of like that world on the internet. If you follow goal setting and motivation, whatever, all that stuff, you'll see SMART goals come up a lot. So just FYI, I did not come up with the SMART goal format. What it stands for is specific, measurable, achievable, realistic, and time-bound. And I'll get into them, so don't freak out because I just said them all real fast. Let's imagine that you have a dance goal. You're thinking, I would like to improve my technique, right? So let's go through this. We're improving our technique. Let's make it specific. Right? Technique is a very broad term. It's so broad. It means so many things it means different things to different people. Every single move has a different technique. What do you really mean? Right? And this is where we really dig into that. So do you mean your technique for your omis? Right? You really want to get specific on what that means for you. Then you want to make it measurable. And this is the hardest one for dancers. I really think it is, because so much of our dance is just feeling, and it's really hard to measure growth in our dance. You know, you don't have like a ruler that you can just like, I've made it this far along the path. So the way that I suggest that people do this is with video. I think video is the easiest way to do it. Say you're going to practice omis, we're going to go with that, for a month. That's like your focus is your omis. At the beginning of the month, take a video of what they look like. In the middle of the month, take a video of what they look like. At the end of the month, take a video of what they look like so that you can see the progress, so that you can measure the progress of your practice to see, are you really getting better as you go? So then achievable, right? What does that mean for you? Say you're a baby belly dancer, and in your head, right, your goal is that you're going to do omis like a Tahitian dancer, right, or a hula dancer. It's just like causing a tornado with their hips. That's probably, right, is that achievable right at the beginning? Maybe not. Maybe we're looking at like half speed of that, a quarter speed of that. Make sure that what you are aiming towards is actually achievable in the time frame that you're setting it. So the last three are really kind of intertwined. So then are realistic, right? For dance, sometimes these are very close together, whether it's achievable and realistic, kind of work in tandem. And then time bound. If you don't put a time limit or a time goal on your goals, then you will just do it forever. Or you won't do it at all. Because there's no time, right? It's any task expands to fill the time allotted to it, right? If you have a year to get better at OMIs, you will take a year to get better at OMIs. If you have no time limit, then you might just never really work on them because you'll think, oh, well, they'll work their way into class or my practice or whatever. But then your teacher doesn't focus on OMIs and you're not doing it in your personal practice because you love to do hip work. So you're doing that instead, right? You're doing the three quarter shimmies and stuff. So putting a time frame on kind of this small little bite-sized realistic goal makes it so much easier to get to the end of it and see how it's progressing so that you can take the formula that you've been working with and tweak it for the next goal. Because like I said, I'm a big fan of experimentation. I think it's really kind of the only way to get into your dance practice. So say you have this specific goal, your OMIs are gonna get this much better in a month. You get to the end of the month and they're like, maybe better, maybe not, I can't really tell, I don't know. So something wasn't working. What wasn't working?
What was the limiting factor?
What was the limiting factor, right? Do you need to go find a teacher to like help you figure out why your OMIs aren't getting better? Do you need to practice in a different way? Do you need to work on some strength training? You know, like what do you need to do to pick that goal up, tweak it, and put it back down and try again? And if you don't have these like little tidbits going, then you have no real way of going forward in your dance. You're kind of just spinning your wheels in place forever. And that might be fine for you. You might be totally happy where you are, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you want to improve, this is a really great way to do it. And there's sometimes people add a Y to the end of this, and it stands for you. And this doesn't work so much for things like OMIs, but if your dance goal has something like competing on being part of like Belly Dance Evolution or some bigger goal, getting a gig, start working at a restaurant, your goal is something bigger and more business oriented. Don't make your goal work in two restaurants, right? Make your goal, I'm going to go and audition at two restaurants, because you need to be in control of the thing, whatever it is. You dancing in two restaurants isn't under your control. It's under the manager's control or the event planner's control, or, you know, they're the ones making those decisions. But you can choose how many people you're going to approach. How many restaurants are you going to go talk to? How many people are you going to email, right? Setting a goal that you have control over the actions that are being taken removes that like the failure aspect that has absolutely nothing to do with you, because you might try really, really hard to get that gig and not get it. But that doesn't mean you didn't work really hard and that it's not worth celebrating. So if you put that factor on it, that you are the one who needs to be taking the actions, it makes your goals a little more attainable and easier to work towards. But that works more in like the business context, I think, of belly dance, and less in the technique context, because obviously like you are the one moving your hips.
Yeah. I really like that last one. I like that. Smarty.
Smarty. Yeah. That's an often used variation of the SMART goal.
Yeah.
As applied to dance.
It really does have to be in your control, because like you said, if you know, you can have goals to, you know, like I'm going to go win, you know, whatever, XYZ.
For competitions, this is right where it counts, right? You can't say, I'm going to go win this competition. You could be like, I'm going to go compete in this competition. I'm going to practice my song 100 times before this competition, right? You can, or 400 times, right? I tried to pick a number that I wasn't too excessive because I didn't want to give people crazy ideas.
I'm all about crazy ideas.
Yeah, all about crazy ideas. So having it set like that, it's something you can accomplish. Because if you practice your piece 400 times before you go and dance in a competition and you don't win, you know what? You did the best you could.
That's right. That's right. And you didn't forget any of it.
Right? Because you did it 400 times. You better not be forgetting it at that point.
That's right. Okay. Fantastic. what else? I've kind of run through my list here, but I feel like there might be some
We
more, and
made
I
it.
think if you've got anything else that you want to share, as far as tips go, and practice is a big deal.
It's a
It's
big
hard to
deal.
do, and
Yeah.
it's hard to do, and it's easy at the same time if we approach it appropriately.
It's so much of it is a mindset. So much of it is a mindset shift. It's the mindset shift to not listen to the part of your brain that's like, oh, but this couch is so comfortable. Right? It's a mindset shift. Here, so I'll tell you an example that I recently had. Learning to observe your thoughts almost as like a third person in your brain. Like there's you, there's like the brain talk that happens, and then there's like a third person that just watches all of it happen, right? So this sounds really weird, but if you get to that point, it's really interesting to watch your thought process and your like just how everything functions. So I don't know how to swim. I've been taking swim lessons because I'm making my daughter take swim lessons, and I feel very hypocritical if I can't swim, but I'm making her. So I signed myself up for swim lessons. So I went and I was there for 10 minutes, and they closed the pool because there was lightning outside. So I was in the locker room changing back into my regular clothes, and I was like, well, they closed the pool. I guess I can just go home. And I was like, well, but I could exercise because they have a gym on site because I should. Like I've been wanting to do more cross training. So I was like, oh, I'll go to the gym. And then I was like, oh, no, but they close in 30 minutes. And then the other part of my brain, well, but you could exercise for 20 minutes. Oh, but 20 minutes isn't enough time. And it's literally like every step of the way, like putting my clothes on was hard. Putting my shoes on was hard. Making myself walk to the gym was hard. Like every step of the process was a pain in the butt. And I was just arguing with myself the whole time. And then third person Tiffany is over here just laughing because like this is so ridiculous. You weren't even planning on being home now. You were planning on being here. So why not just do something else that's also physically straining? Swimming is hard, man. Right? So like just go to the gym and do hard stuff. And but I got into the gym, I warmed up, and then suddenly it was 20 minutes later and it was time to go. And I was like, oh, when did that happen? Because that's when the motivation kicked in, right? It was when I forced my butt into the gym and then got over it because I was listening to my podcast. I was super happy. I was lifting weights. I was like, yes, this is awesome. Why was this such a pro? Why was it so hard for me to get here? And that's what happens to us with our dance. Maybe your dance floor is like, my dance floor is probably 100 feet away from my couch. But walking that 100 feet, it's like crossing the Sahara Desert. But once I get there and I dance for 5 or 10 minutes, 99% of the time, I'm good for 20 minutes, 30 minutes, how much time I've set up to do it, I'm ready to go. And just that is just, I think, so pivotal is to start to view your thought process, view what you're thinking. What excuses is your brain making for you? And are they actually like real? Are they real excuses? Or are you just, your brain just trying to get out of it? Our
It's
brain's
your
just trying to
brain
get out of
acting like a
everything.
toddler.
Like a toddler. And I have a toddler, guys. I know what it's like.
The motivation, it builds on itself too. I recall we did the How to Build a Sustainable Practice Habit last January.
It's an excellent course.
I love it. And we are going to do it again, by the way, in January. So stay tuned for that. And one of the gals that was in that course was a maniac. She had it all worked out. She was getting up every morning an hour earlier. And it was incremental. It didn't start off at an hour. It was a shorter
Yeah,
time than that.
small steps.
But I remember I was so gratified one time when she posted in the private group about how it just built on each other. Every day built on itself. And she got to a point where her practice was her gift to herself. It was her
Yes.
private sustaining thing that was just such a gift to herself.
Yep.
And I love that.
Yeah,
So,
because you're worth it.
yes. Oh my gosh, you're so worth it. We're all worth it. And all it takes is just getting off the couch or,
Yeah.
crawling out of bed or whenever you do it,
Is, just really looking at your priorities and really seeing, like, is practice something you really want to focus on? And if it is, then let the experimentation begin.
Exactly. Yeah. So I want to touch on one more time on the figuring out what to practice PDF.
Yes, check it out.
Yes, absolutely. It's free and you can find that at bellydancegeek.com/what to practice. And I did mention the belly dance bundle that's coming up and I'm
So
so
excited.
excited. I know, me too. So excited. 22 contributors from all over the
It's crazy.
world.
It's crazy.
Rock the Routine is also in that program and you can find that. You can find it, all of their contributors and see who's going to be in it. It's like amazing, amazing at bellydancegeek.com/bundle. And there's also an Instagram challenge, a 21-day Instagram challenge
Yes.
coming up. Talk about it. Tell
Yes.
us about it.
So head over to either one of the links that Heather just mentioned and get on the mailing list because I'll be sending out information. But I think we're starting on Friday and it's going to be 21 days of belly dance. So we have most of our contributors will be part of this amazing challenge. Last year we went bonkers and it was so much fun. Every day one of our contributors will be putting up a drill or an exercise, something small that you can do at home in 5 minutes, right? Usually, like 5 minutes is usually enough time. So if you're working on trying to figure out when to practice, this is a really good kind of way to ease yourself into it. Take those small steps and practice these little things. They're given to you. You don't have to think about what to practice. You just show up, do it for 21 days. And it spans the gamut of items for you to do because all of our contributors are doing such different little drills. And then if you want to enter into, we have prizes. We have lots of prizes this year. I went overboard this year with the prizes. I was just having so much fun. But there will be prizes for people who, who want to film themselves doing the exercises or the drills and then upload them to Instagram and tag us. You can also upload them to Facebook, but the challenge mostly lives on Instagram. So we have prizes for the people who do the most days. We have people with the most creative outfits. We're doing all kinds of stuff. But you don't have to compete every day to compete. You don't have to post every day in order to be eligible for a prize. We do just do random draws for anybody who posts more than 7 days, because, like, let's face it, we all have real lives, and sometimes finding 5 minutes to do a little Instagram video is not in the cards for that day, and that's totally cool. So anybody who does more than 7 days will be entered into like the random drawings, and I ordered more Zills than I needed for the contest that just ended. So we've got Saroyan Zills, we've got Turquoise International Zills, I've got boxes of jewelry hanging around that I'm going to be giving away. I got all kinds of stuff. It's
Swag.
really going to be fun.
And you mentioned if you're trying to something about figuring out when to practice, because not everybody at Belly Dance Geek with the practice habit, we talk a lot about morning practice, and that doesn't work for everybody. So there's a quiz. Tiffany has a quiz that you can take that will kind of help you pinpoint what
Yeah, it's
part of your
fun.
day is best for gives you your best opportunity to get your practice in, and it's free also, and you can get that at bellydancegeek.com/quiz, and there'll be a downloadable PDF that you can get for that to help you work that out too, so.
Yeah, and each of the PDFs, so there's kind of three buckets I put you guys in, and I'm not going to tell you about them. You have to go take the quiz. But each bucket, right, that you get placed in category does have its own PDF with its own tips. So they are geared towards like the time of day that you might be working your practice into. So you can check that out. I will spoil something. Me saying that motivation is crap is one of the tips.
Okay.
Spoilers.
All right. Let's see. We are I want to take some Q&As, but first, and I've got one. Dom, I see your question here. I'm going to ask Tiffany that here in just a second. I love to do a lightning round. I think this is fun.
Ooh,
So, yeah, the first thing that comes to your mind, and if it's a thing that you just can't think of, just say pass, okay?
okay.
Okay, ready?
I'm so nervous, yes.
Oh, okay. All right. These are your favorite things, okay?
Okay.
Your favorite book.
Karen Marie Mooning. I can't remember what it's called. It's the Fae series that's set in Dublin. Shadow Fever. Shadow Fever is one of the books. I don't know if that's the name of the first one, though.
Okay, your favorite food?
Mexican.
Tacos. I love me some
So many tacos.
tacos. Your favorite base color?
Base color?
Yeah, if you're gonna get dressed, what's your what was your base?
I wear solid colored tank tops. They just kind of vary. Purple? I have two purple ones.
Right, and then what's your favorite splash color? If you were gonna throw something in, what would it be?
Teal.
All right. Your
You can
favorite.
see where the branding for the bundle came from.
What's your favorite day of the week?
Used to be Saturday.
Ask you about that later. You have a favorite poet?
No.
Okay, pass. Favorite composer?
No.
Pass. Favorite accent?
Scottish.
Woo! Favorite juice?
Orange? But only from Portugal.
Oh,
There's a. I know. I live in
you can't
Florida
find
too.
orange juice, huh?
Yeah. I think Florida orange juice is garbage.
Portuguese, ooh, we won't tell you. Don't anybody tell anybody. Portuguese orange juice. Okay. Your favorite behavior?
Thoughtfulness.
Oh. Do you have a favorite macam?
Not one that I can think of off the top of my head.
Right, pass. Favorite instrument.
Favorite.
Instrument.
The violin.
Oh, nice. All right. Thank you.
Oh,
Okay, and then we are going to get to question and answers in right after this. If people could take one thing away from this call, what is the most important thing?
I think I'm gonna pick two. I'm gonna break the rules.
Okay.
I think motivation is crap is honestly probably the thing I would want most people to take away because it is. And if you can overcome that, you can overcome a lot. But other than that, because it's my soapbox, I think that knowing what you're going to practice when you get onto the dance floor will save you a lot of time and heartache. So take the time to figure out what that is, whether you use the worksheet or you talk to a teacher or you do a private lesson or you just really sit down and think about what you want out of your dance in general, and then making that the focus of your practice and figuring out how to do that, figuring out what to do in your practice time, that is monumentally important to your dance.
Yeah, and I'll just add that that is also part of what we study and work with in the sustainable, how to build a sustainable practice habit too. We come up with, we work on all sorts of ways to lay out your practice before you even get there so you don't have to worry about wasting time.
Yeah, just show up and do it.
Exactly. Okay, time for questions.
Yeah, but before we do that, I'm going to tell you, because you said you were going to ask me about why my favorite day used to be Saturday.
Oh, you want to tell me now? Okay, you want
I'm
to
going to tell you. I'm
tell
going to just real quick. It's because I don't have like a traditional 9 to 5 anymore. So honestly, I never know what day of the week it is.
me.
Ever. Just I had to get a smartwatch because I was missing things like this. Because I would be like, oh, it's not Wednesday. I would think it's Friday and it's all of a sudden it's Wednesday. But to me, that is like a marker of success in my life.
When you don't know what day of the week it
I
is.
don't know what day it is, then like I don't have to know what day of the week it is. So like I'm
Okay.
good. So now I don't really have a favorite day of the week anymore. But it used to be Saturday
I see.
because I used to have a regular job.
You're like, oh my God, the first 5 days of the week are the worst.
Yeah.
Saw a meme on that earlier today. Anyway, so you're like you're on, it's like you're on vacation all the time because that's the way I feel on vacation. I don't know what day of the week.
Okay. You would think that, but it's almost like I'm working all the time, really.
I probably need a
Yeah.
vacation.
I, you know, I would like one, but I don't get one until after the bundle. Usually after the bundle every year, I take like 2 weeks off.
Right on.
Because by the time the bundle is over, I'm just like a puddle of goo. Like I don't even exist anymore. So that's when my vacation is, after the bundle.
Well, we'll be there soon because it's almost bundle time.
It's almost bundle time.
Okay, so Dom has a question. She says, sometimes I feel like I have so much to practice, and we always will, in parentheses. How do you get over the fear of performing? Because I always will have so much to practice. At one point in my belly dance journey, I've drowned myself in practice and never performed.
That's a good question.
Oh, yeah. You take it first, and then I'll add.
So I think for the first thing everyone needs to do in this situation is determine whether or not they want to perform. Our dance form really pushes people to perform at hoflas and at recitals and things. But like, if you don't want to, you don't have to. Like, don't let people bully you into it, right? If you don't want to perform, then you don't have to. You can get better just for yourself and your own desire to be in this dance. That being said, if you do want to perform, I think if you want to get over the fear of performing, so these are two different questions. I think if you want to get over the fear of performing, you have to perform as much as humanly possible. So anytime there's a hafla, your teacher needs volunteers for a gig, you guys are doing the Riverside Arts Market or anything like that, you should be signing up to go, even though like it makes you want to poop your pants.
Or throw up.
Or throw up, right? Like put your name down on the sheet, because only performing will kind of get you over the hump of the fear of performing. And it will also guide your practices too, because suddenly if you have to perform that choreography with everyone, not only are you going to find the time to practice, but you're going to know what to practice. It's like, it'll really focus your efforts. So that's what I suggest for that. And then I think the second question is really drowning yourself in practice and then never performing. I think there, you need to set it as a goal, right? I am going to perform at this thing, at a dance competition. I'm going to compete. A lot of people use competitions for this. They use it as a reason to focus their practice and to get performing out there. So you can do that and then have that focus your practice towards it. But I think really just practicing as much as humanly possible and signing yourself up for all of the things that your community is doing, if that's what you actually want to do, go for it.
Yeah. I couldn't have said it better myself. touching on the competitions, I think a lot of people do use competitions for that reason. It does give you a goal, and it also gives you feedback. Because you're going to get, it depends on which competitions you do. Some have, the judges have very little time, and they'll write their scores, and they don't really put a lot of written feedback. But other competitions will give you like pages of stuff that is so valuable. So there's that. And I agree with Tiffany, you know, the first time that you perform, if you've never performed before, that first time is gonna suck.
Oh, it's terrible. It's so bad.
But once you do it, I remember I used to organize showcases for my students at the end of the dance year in May. And we would run from September through May. And we'd have this showcase, and I would start just kind of massaging the idea in about January, February, you know, saying things like, you know, when we perform this, or, you know, and y'all be like, what? What are you
perform?
Talking about?
That's the four-letter word in this this studio.
Ben, and so, you know, I just keep going with that. And by the time we would get to the performance, they'd be all nervous. They'd just be a, you know, nervous wreck. And they'd get out there and they'd do it. And I remember this mother-daughter pair one time. I'll never forget them. After the showcase was over with, they were like, I was really nervous, but that was really good and cool. And when can we do it again?
Mm-hmm.
So they were ready. They wanted to do it. And they did. They did it at least another time or two before I moved from there. And so do it. Just Just do it. It's going to be hard the first time, and you'll get over it,
Yeah.
and you'll
Just
want to do it again.
don't listen to the voice in your head that's afraid, right? Like here's the thing. You might always be afraid when you perform.
A little bit is good.
That might just be how your brain is wired. And you can force feed it out, right? Like you can just keep going and get over it. But even I sometimes like still get that way. Like even in a restaurant I've danced in 100 times, if I haven't danced there in like 3 weeks, I'll show up and go, oh
It feels
my
like
God,
the first day of school, doesn't it?
I know, it's like, oh my God, I have to dance. I have to dance for these people. But like there's people in the restaurant and they're gonna see me. And then I go dance and I'm like, oh, that was fine.
Yeah.
No big deal. But that first minute, right before the curtains open on the recital, right? I'm always back there like, and then we start, the music starts and you start going and it's like, oh, okay. And you like get into it. So even with 11 years on me, I still feel that like anxiety right before I go on. Like before we started this call, Heather, I was sitting over here like,
Oh, me too. Every
yeah,
time.
every
Every time.
time.
Is this thing gonna work? Are they gonna be able to hear me? Am I got is there an echo? Blah 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 blah. Yeah, and here we are, we're just having a conversation, so
Yeah. And you can tell I'm laughing way more now than I was at the beginning because I'm way more comfortable.
yeah.
It's just how it works sometimes. You just
In other words, you're
do it a
totally
lot.
normal, Dom.
You're totally normal.
Who
I
else
promise
do
you,
you play with?
even your like most favoritest belly dancers, they feel that way too sometimes. Maybe not all the time, but they'll be like, their favorite dancer will be in the audience on one of their shows, and they'll be like, oh no, I have to dance in front of them.
I think I actually remember. I hope I get this right. I think that I remember Sadie actually saying in a workshop one time that she gets nervous before she performs. And
Yeah,
I'm like,
you're
what?
Sadie.
Come on. So, yeah.
Who's one of the contributors to the bundle this year, guys? Just saying.
Absolutely, yes. Oh my gosh. Y'all have to go check it out. The all of the list of the contributors, all 22, are on the homepage, and you can get there at bellydancegeek.com/bundle. Check it
Yeah,
all out.
it's amazing.
Who else? Do we have any other questions? Anybody? Anybody? I think we covered some really good stuff. Dom says, one last question. She says, I feel like a performance is seen as a finished, pristine product. But how do I get out of that mindset?
Okay,
Okay,
so
it's not.
it's not, and so I'll answer your question, Dom, for sure. But I strongly urge you to just keep up with the belly dance bundle through the next couple of weeks. We have a podcast with Sadie that's coming out, and if that is something that you worry about, you're gonna want to listen to that episode. So I'm just gonna like put that out there in the world because she talks about this and how she handles it, and I think you'll find that really interesting. But for me, it's not a finished, pristine product. I've performed choreographies years after I first developed them, sometimes for the same audience, sometimes for different audiences. But they'll be wildly different the second time around or the third time around, because I've learned more and I've changed as a dancer. And so I think that once you perform something, it's almost like the beginning, really. It's like your first iteration of the thing. You can leave it there. You can leave that as the final, I'm going to say final product, because no dancer ever will ever tell you that their final choreography is pristine.
That's
I
true.
think everybody's like, oh, I could have done this better. I could have done that better. You know, we're really good at that, at saying that. So I think taking that perfectionist mindset out of it, like that first iteration of it is never going to be the pristine product, and the last iteration of it is also not going to be the pristine product, because that just doesn't exist. But to get out of the mindset, like as a practical tip on what to do, I would choreograph the same song different ways. I would almost create a whole choreography, memorize it, jettison it, and create a whole new choreography. And then honestly, I would merge the two together because I would think that that was fun, but like we don't have to go that
A good thing though, because the first thing that you create is what comes out, and then you look at it and see or feel or hear different things. So
Yeah.
I love that idea about merging them together.
Yeah, because I know one thing that I really love about dance is the musicality, like especially of belly dance. Musicality in belly dance is like, I love it. It's one of my favorite things. And being able to show the people who are watching you dance parts of the music that they did not previously hear is something that I find like amazing that we can do that. Like we can show people hearing, like we can show them what to hear. And like, that's crazy to me. And so if you do one piece multiple times to kind of break out of that, you get the chance to play with that. Oh, I'm going to dance to this instrument. Or there's this, like this really background beat here that like most people don't really hear, but I hear it and I know it's there. So when I dance it, people will see it. They will hear it. And so then you get the chance to play with like all of the things instead of having to pick what to go with in the music at a given time.
Yeah. And every time you dance to the same song, you're going to hear something different if you're listening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at different points in your life, like Tiffany was saying, I had choreographies that I created several years ago for groups of students, and I move a lot. Not so much anymore, but you know, I move like every 2 or 3 years to a new place. I just whip these choreographies out again and we teach them. And now when I do it, it's like, oh God, what was I thinking? You know, this is simplistic and I could put so much more and I hear this and, and that's the way I recommend listening to music too.
Mm-hmm.
When you pull out a new song or an old song, there's melody and there's rhythm and there's, you know, drum line. Sometimes there's an extra one at the bottom and there's, you know, little accents or a little wasm in there. Make a point to listen to the song and follow one thing that first time through. Follow the melody.
Yeah.
And then listen again and just follow the rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And then listen again and just follow the accents or the, you know, the little squiggly loasms, and you'll hear so many things. And you got to lay down and put like earphones in or earbuds in and close your eyes, because if you close your eyes, you'll hear more.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you can also do this if you're not super familiar with Arabic music yet. You can do this with music you are very familiar with Western music that you really like. And follow different instruments through the whole song as much as possible. And you'll start to train your ear to listen to all of the different parts when you get to a music that maybe you're not as familiar with. Because when you're not as familiar with the music, it's just a lot to take in.
Yeah.
You're trying to learn all these different things. So if you do it sometimes with music that you are more familiar with, you can translate the skills a little bit better into something you're not as familiar with.
Right on. And Dom says, thank you, everyone. I appreciate it. That is the answer I was looking for.
Yay.
Glad to help.
We could help.
It's our pleasure. Our pleasure.
Always.
Any more questions?
Feel free to email them to me later.
Oh, yeah.
Too. I'm here for you.
Hello at Belly Dance, The Belly Dance Bundle?
Yeah, thebellydancebundle.com.
All right, on. Hello at thebellydancebundle.com. That's Tiffany.
Yep.
All right.
I ask people what they need help with all the time. And then I just like, I get responses back like, oh, I need to work on Zills. And I'll be like, here's some ideas. I just like brain dump on them. And then hopefully something sticks.
Okay. I think we're probably about ready to close it out here if there aren't any more questions. I just want to thank everybody for coming, and it is the end of the call, but the conversation isn't over. We do have a private Facebook group it's Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse Facebook group, and shortly you will get an email from me with an invitation to join that group if you want to. There's a little bit of a delay because I have it set up so that nobody gets in without me letting them in, because I want to check everybody out and make sure that they're actually belly dancers.
That's right.
Also in the email, there'll be a link to the call recording and all the links to the resources that were mentioned in this call. There's also a survey in there that asks for your feedback. If you have ideas for topics, speakers, improvements that I can make, whatever, I would love to hear that. Also, I want to tell you about the next Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse call. October is going to be a double clubhouse month. Okay. And the times are a little bit different than we've been doing lately to accommodate, people on the other side of the world. On October 17th. It's a Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific time. We're going to have Zena Brown, and she's calling in from Vietnam. So we had to kind of tweak that a little bit.
Yeah,
she's on the other side of the world, and she's going to talk with us about dealing with booking agents in the Middle East and her new book, Fire in the Belly, a memoir of falafel, flings, and shiny things.
Good news.
Yeah, and I'm reading it right now, and it's fabulous. It's a gritty, in-depth view. Like, I almost feel like a voyeur of a view of the inside world of dealing with booking agents, and basically being a traveling belly dancer. It's fascinating stuff.
That's cool.
Yeah, and then on Monday, October 21st at 3:30 p.m. Pacific, we're going to have Sadia. Sadia was supposed to be on with us last week, but her topic is balancing your belly dance career with motherhood, and that is a real thing.
Let me tell you, preach.
It is. It's a real thing. So we were not able to have the call as originally scheduled because she had a little one who was sick. So we rescheduled, and that will be October 21st. So that'll be in the email too. And lastly, this clubhouse is the come on in kind, not the no boys allowed. So if you know somebody that's interested or that would be interested, invite him to join us at bellydancegeek.com/clubhouse. And until next time, happy dancing. Thanks for listening to the Belly Dance Geek Clubhouse. For more geektacular resources, visit us at bellydancegeek.com.